How do you get a Russian 767 airplane from Shannon Airport? It's had it. Excusing the pun, but it's dead. It's dead on the runway in Shannon Airport. Now, how do you get that and bring it up to Enniscrone in County Sligo? Just imagine a Boeing 767. A funeral director, mortician, who indeed hails from Eastgay, I believe, in County Sligo, who's a funeral director in Ballina in County Mayo, took a notion, and to best describe it, I want to go back to my home town of Ballina in County Mayo and link up with this genius, a man of great dreams, David McGowan. You're very welcome.
How are you doing, Adrian?
Arab. I was often worse, you know, to tell you the truth. How are you doing?
I don't know what way I'm going here. I'm upside down between looking at the sea here and watching me tug and barge coming from Southampton. I have to be in the Shannon Estuary on Sunday evening, and we're already 7 hours behind because when we came out of the Southampton Estuary, we just came round by the Isle of Wight and we hit a storm and we had to hold off. Now, the reason we're 9 hours behind sailing now, this is the tug that's pulling the barge to land in Shannon Estuary to pick up my Boeing 767 and then get out onto the Atlantic Ocean and bring her up around the west of Ireland and land her on the beach in Enniscrone, County Sligo, and then convey it into my camping site across the road. So time is essential here because we have, as they said to me below in Shannon Airport the other day, do you realise you're closing down an international airport for 2 hours? So I said, I do, yeah, but come on, we're going to get on with it anyway. So we have cranes and everything hired for Monday morning for loading this machine, this plane, onto the barge. So we're 9 hours now. The lads are, if you look on, anyone in New York, actually, if they have gone to the app, the fish, the marine traffic, the name of the boat and tug that's pulling this move is the MTS Statham, S-T-A-T-U-M. And you can track her the whole way going up along the coast of Ireland, coming into the Shannon Estuary, picking up my jumbo jet and bringing her to Enniscrone. You can track her the whole way. Now, we're looking at bad weather tonight, they said me as well. So we're 7 hours behind sailing. But in fairness to the lads on the tug and the barge, they've revved it up a bit and they're doing about 7.9 knots now. They normally do 6, so they're trying to gain the time for me now. So it'll be interesting tomorrow, Sunday, what way they're travelling. But yeah, we're kind of anxious and we're kind of worried about it at the moment because the whole move is sea dependent, you know.
I know. But listen, David, let's back up a little bit anyway.
No problem.
This plane, how did you know about this decommissioned airplane in the first place?
Well, it all started, like, I'm here tucked away in the west of Ireland. It's in Enniscrone, County Sligo, but we're very close to the Mayo border. Ballina is only 6 kilometres down the road. So we're stuck in there, and it's a lovely little town, Enniscrone, and it has a lot of the tourist amenities around it, but we don't have people coming there. The Port Ireland figures this year are looking about maybe attracting 8 million people to the island this year. So I'm saying to myself, well, we could only get a percentage of them to come west instead of going down to the Ring of Kerry and all around there. We're stick listening to that now, you know. So what Port Ireland did there... Port Ireland, in fairness to them, a couple of years ago, along with the government, the one decent thing they did around for the west of Ireland was to put in a route called the Wild Atlantic Way. Now, that's a road that goes around the whole coastline of the west of Ireland.
From Donegal and, whole way down to Cork,
Yes, absolutely, and they're looking at extending it. Now, the thing is, people are... What I noticed on that route, I noticed an awful lot of foreign cars English number plates, what we used to see back in the 70s coming.
That's right.
And then they disappeared. And now I said to myself, well, this Wild Atlantic Way thing is working. But there was a problem, Adrian. The problem was that the people weren't stopping, and people in Ireland with the drinking and all of that today, they're eating and drinking where they're sleeping. So
right.
I said to myself, right, they're leaving Sligo, and they pass through Enniscrone, and they pass through Ballinair, and they keep going till they reach Galway, and they do the spend the money there. So I just said to myself, right, what can I do to stop them, to make them sleep? And where they're sleeping, as I said, that's where they do their eating and drinking. So it had to be something unusual. So I had a 15-acre nursery field in Enniscrone, right across from the beach. So I thought about, what could I do with this? Something has to be something attractive and something unusual. So, but it also has to be something tourism related. You know, if you're thinking of attracting these people. So, I looked at a modern type of camping that's going out through Europe there at the moment. It's called glamping. Now, I didn't know what glamping was, but anyway, I looked away into it anyway, and it was kind of unusual places to stay. So I said to myself, right. So I went off and I looked at a few of the sites that were being developed around Europe. But there were a lot of huts and trees and teepees and all sorts of things like that. But your nice little town in Enniscrone is facing the wild Atlantic Ocean. And if I put a few of these teepees there, they couldn't heat up on cloud nine overnight, you know. So whatever I put there had to be sturdy, like it had to be kind of strong. So I came up with my own team of turning all types of transportation into accommodation.
Right.
And that didn't exclude the train. So planes are decommissioned in Ireland, and I rang around. These are planes that have 29 years service in the year, and they have to be decommissioned.
But
so
David, I just want to ask you, though, like, what is Shannon Airport? Is there a graveyard there? Is there a dumping site? I mean, what happens? The plane came into Shannon. Okay.
Yeah, I'm getting to that.
Good.
I rang the three airports.
I don't want to rush you.
The planes come in for decommissioning. Right. It's not a graveyard. They pick an odd airport around Europe and say, right, Heathrow won't take it. We're too busy here with what's going on. So they'll bring them into Ireland and say, right, we'll decommission them there. That they take all the propellers, they take all the wiring, and then they smash them and they sell them to a scrap guy. So they had one in Shannon, and I went out and I said, look, would you think of doing something different? I'd like to buy it. Now, they got excited about that because this never happened before. So I told them what I wanted to do. I told them I had a seaside town in Enniscrone just sitting outside Ballinair. We need attention, and this would suit great in my back garden there. So they kind of thought that kind of funny. But you know what? They did see how beneficial it could be to the town. So they agreed to sell me the plane. Now, there's a whole lot of stuff, the legal stuff in around that. But anyway, I succeeded in convincing them to let me have the plane. So we put in the whole engineering prospect of moving it. So, I mean, she's 159 foot long, Adrian.
159 foot,
yeah. Yeah, she's 159. She's one of the biggest Boeings ever made, Boeing ever made. So can you imagine this sitting in a little village in a school in County Sligo?
Yeah.
So it would be an attraction in itself, especially along the Wild Atlantic Way. So we went about, anyways, engineering the whole prospect of moving her by road, and we'd have to cut her up in three sections, and all that was going well, cut the wings off her and cut her in three sections. But we ran into problems at the very end. There were two bridges in Clare that we couldn't get under. One of them was coming out of the airport, and one of them was going into Limerick. So the county councils, Clare County Council, and they wouldn't allow me put a crane on the bridge to lift the portions of the plane over to the other side, because I could collapse the bridges and stop all the traffic going into Shannon Airport. So that was turned down, Adrian, and we were very disappointed at that after 8 months engineering that prospect. So I was standing below in Shannon, and I was looking there, and I was disappointed. And then as I was there, I was looking out, and the sea was in front of me. So I said, why don't I engineer the prospect of moving it by sea? So that's exactly what we did do. And we're after spending the last 8 months, and now that concept is turning into a reality. We know the move is on, and we hope to be moving that plane this week and then arriving in Enniscrone on Friday morning, the 6th of May at 8:30 in the morning with her. and we'll then beach it on the beach and bring her up to the campsite. So it's creating a lot of big stir around here, and it's creating a lot of attention.
Absolutely. Now, let me just, I want to ask you, though, about the process. From once you found it, that it was, that it wasn't going to happen by road. Now, there aren't tugboats that would be capable of taking this barge, dragging it up to Enniscorn. So where did you find the tugboats, and where did you find the barge?
Yeah, well, we had the barge itself is, because the plane is so big, this would be one of the biggest moves in the world, right?
Yes.
So to move a Boeing 767 is not an easy task. No, when you put her out on the water, the barge that I needed had to be at least 15 metres wide, because she'd be top-heavy in weight, and a good gust of wind could blow her over.
Right.
So the barge had to be 50 metres in length. Now, the plane is, that would be still 9 foot of her sticking out at the end of the barge, but she's still, that's the size we needed. There was no barge around the coast of Ireland that was big enough to take it. So we found one in Southampton, and we had the problem of getting it from Southampton to Shannon Estuary. So
right.
it was more like we hired a tug in then, a 45-ton tug in Southampton, then to tow it over. But there was nothing along the coast of Ireland big enough to take it. So we have it, and it's on its way. It left Southampton on Thursday, and hopefully we did hit bad weather. They had to slow up, but I noticed there on that app there, we're watching her every minute there. She's making good ground in the last 7 hours. I think they've gained an hour and a half because they're revving it up, and the whole country is watching her. I'm praying that it's life in Shannon on Monday, so we can load Monday evening, tie her down Tuesday, and possibly come out of the estuary on Wednesday and arriving in Enniscorn. She'd be about 22 hours going up along the coast, like there.
Yeah.
So there's great excitement. The Clear lads, the safety guys, the sub-aqua guys in Clear, I think they're going to escort us to the Galway border. Then the Galway lads are going to escort us up to the Mayo border, and the Mayo lads are going to escort her into the Killala Bay, and the Sligo lads will escort her in. So there's a great buzz out there, you know.
You know, David, I also am fascinated, and I'm sure Tourism Ireland, not to mention the town of Enniscorn. You know, there'll be a load of new jobs in West Sligo, in the village of Enniscorn. As this is, you know, and it'll put Sligo on the world tourist map, that's for sure. You know.
Oh, she's on the way there, Adrian. On the site alone, the development alone, we suspect to put 40 jobs into that village. Now, for the turn up on Friday, we had a meeting in Enniscorn last night, and half of Ballinair was out there. And I just stood up at the meeting and I said, it's amazing to see all those people at that meeting last night, because they're roaring for this to happen. And they were able to tell me that every hotel in Enniscorn is booked out, and then they crane for that day, Friday and the weekend. The crane people told me they couldn't get a room in Ballinair last night.
Right.
So they expect up to 10,000 people for the landing on Friday morning. Now, so that in itself is creating a great buzz. But I suppose what I want to say to the people over in America and everywhere, I was one of the immigrants that left in 86, 85. I went over to Chicago. I loved America. I trained there. I loved my job there. I came, but there was a pull for me to come home. I came back after 3 years, and I just was passionate about Sligo. I'm passionate about where I live, and I do anything to put it on the world map, and I'm getting there.
Yeah, well, you definitely are getting there. Now, you know, in towns like Ballina, the whole idea of a funeral home is a new, relatively new idea, because the tradition in Ireland was that the corpse would be waked in the house.
That's correct, yeah.
It will go from there to, you know, to the chapel, to the church, and from there to the cemetery. You must have been one of the first, particularly in the West, and definitely in Mayo and Sligo, to actually to establish a funeral home. Go back to Chicago anyway, where you left to train as a mortician, as an undertaker, as an embalmer. Yes.
That's right. Well, I came from a small village called Easkey, about 300 people of a population. And my father had a pub and a shop there. Basically, what he had was a mixed bag of businesses, which was well common around rural Ireland, sure. Because you wouldn't survive just on one business. So you depended on a couple of different businesses. So I grew up in that situation. And I took a fancy to the smallest part of the business, which was the funeral undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
I was worked in the pub and the shop and stuff like that. And as you just said, it was all wakes at that time. And I remember cutting the pounds of ham and the loaves of bread and running out to the wake houses with all this stuff. I remember all of that. And then if someone passed away in Dublin or something like that, well, then the funeral went straight from the mortuary in Dublin to the west, straight into the church in the west of Ireland. That was the normal thing.
Right.
And I remember one particular night that we had a problem with the deceased itself after making that journey, and I know remember the sacristan in the church in East, he came running into the bar on a bingo night asking for my father, who just brought the funeral from Dublin, and I remember all panic stations at the time, and nobody knew what to do. There was a problem with the coffin in the church, and I'll never forget the night we were told we had to get the body embalmed. Nobody knew what embalming was in Ireland at the time,
right.
To the 1983. And I remember we having to wait all night up for a man to come from Belfast to save us. And I was here thinking to myself, this is the nicest part of the business I like, the smallest, and now this problem. So I set about finding out all about embalming. Nobody actually knew in the west of Ireland about it. So a man from Cork actually answered my call, and he brought me down to his premises, who himself had returned from New York, and he opened the first funeral home in Ireland in 1967. And he trained in the McAllister Institute in New York. So I was actually amazed, because the first time I met that man, he was such a gentleman, I realized that he had learned his trade outside of Ireland. So when somebody inspires you like that, you tend to go on that trail. And he allowed me to do that procedure and learn that procedure. And then I, of course, did the same as him. I got itchy feet and I enrolled in a mortuary school in Chicago. But I had no idea, no relatives in Chicago. The school got me a funeral home in Chicago that I got living in overhead while I attended school. And cut a long story short, I learned the trade there and I ended up working for the biggest funeral home in Chicago from a small village in Easkey. So, but there was a passion to come home because I knew I had something rare and I had something new. I loved living in America. I loved the climate. I loved the lifestyle. I just loved America. And but there was that pull. It was like a magnetic pull to come home all the time and come back and show off that you're learning something. Or I don't know, there was something going on in that in my head. But I did. I returned home. And Easkey was only a little village of 300 people. Ballinara was only up the road. There were no funeral homes, so I decided to put up a funeral home. But if I did, I'd put one up, one like America. I was the first, I think my funeral home would have been the first purpose-built funeral home. Before that, there were kind of, there was a few around, all right, but there were converted sheds and there were four square walls and the coffin lift in the middle. I built a big foyer in mine and put a big chandelier in it and put a fireplace. I said it was the first funeral home in Ireland put a fireplace in. Because I was copying my American ideas. Because once you embalm the body in Trinbury, you can have as many fires on as you want.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the old way, go in, oh no, cut out the fires, open the windows, and all that carry on was going on in the way. But that's when there was no embalming being practiced in Ireland. So I came back, and I suppose I set the standard there for the funeral home business in Ireland. It wasn't the first funeral home, but that first funeral home was the man that trained me, Val O'Connor in Cork, in 1967, but what I did was, I suppose I brought it to a standard, and I'm holding that standard there now.
Yeah.
And I also teach, I have a funeral home in Sligo Town as well. So then I do the villages in between, in Enniscrone and Easkey and Castleconnor. So that's where I work about. And I had this site in Enniscrone, I wanted to do something different with it, like the likes of guys like me. That you remember, Adrian, I see death every week. Like I see bereaved people crying over losing the most important thing in their lives to them, and that's the greatest loss that people will ever have in their lives.
Yes.
And they've just lost it. And you're sitting with them, you're talking with them, and you see the sobbing and the crying, and you see the local communities gathering together in support of the families.
Yes.
And you see this is the greatest loss ever you'll have in your life. And I'm in that environment every week. So, you know, people are looking at me kind of funny now, saying, how come you're doing this? You're a funeral director, and you're not supposed to be doing anything daft like this, you know. But sometimes funeral directors and embalmers need something else as well, you know.
Definitely. But, you need something with a bit of buzz in it.
Yeah. Harry, you do, yeah. But, I mean, I take a bit of pride in it. The funeral business has been great to me. I started writing stuff. I used to be a bit annoyed about the way the funeral business was, the Irish wake was portrayed around the world. I remember being in Philadelphia, coming back from Atlantic City one time. I gave a talk to the New Jersey Funeral Directors Association. So that was a big thing for me, for them bringing me out to talk. But as I was in the airport waiting, there was a rule came out in Europe there, one of these Brussels rules, directives that we had to abide by, that they were cutting out embalming fluid. And an English company had an article in the New York Times and about this, and what they were saying was the Irish way threatened. And one guy across at in the airport said to me, he said, David McGowan, he said, I see ye made the New York Times. And I said, what's that? So he showed me the paper. And you know what? The caption that was over it was a man holding a pint of Guinness lying with his arm on the top of a coffin. Now, to me, that was a great insult. I just looked on it, and I decided, if that's the impression that we've been given, like, I started out on the road of telling people exactly the whole reason behind the wake, and I started writing about the wake. I went and visited people in New York that left. They told me stories about when they left and when their parents died. I remember one woman told me she remembers when her father died. Herself and her mother was in the kitchen, and all the metal was up Nathan Mountain, harvesting all the stuff. So when her father died, herself and her mother went in and got a white cheese, and they put it up on the tree in the garden, and that was their text message. And all the people from the mountain came down the minute they seen the white cheese up on the tree. So I started telling and writing about this, and the next thing, a few groups in America got a hold of it, and the New Jersey guys. I basically wrote how therapeutic the spending the time with the body is, and that was the wake, and just explaining, you know, how, like, we used to have loads of people writing, the psychologists around the world used to write about the wake and the drinking and all that sort of stuff, but now they're writing in their books, why do the Irish grieve better than anybody else in the world, and that's the wake that they made a joke about for the last 50 years, you know.
And not so only that, go ahead. No, I just wanted to point out, though, that the Irish wake, which has indeed has shown up in theatre, in movies, in story, and in song, was greatly exaggerated. However, you and I would remember a time when the wakes taking place in the house would draw people, many who didn't even know who the deceased was, because the atmosphere and the scale, the story was that this was a great place to have a bit of crack and to have, you know, to have a drinking session and to have everything else like that, which is a tremendous insult and a distraction for the family of the deceased. I mean, that's in fact, that needed to get a total facelift, you know?
Well, yeah, but it can be told in a different, you know, the truth about the wake is, you know, where it came from and the Mehel. I don't know, I wrote stuff on the Mehel, and the Mehel is a group of people that come together in a time of need. right? And it stems from the famine time in Ireland.
Absolutely.
You might have good cabbage, some fellow might have good potatoes, another fellow might have good turnip. So you shared your cabbage with him. So it was all a collective responsibility. They all shared, right?
Yeah.
Now, if that streamed along when the hay had to be done, everybody met and they helped each other out with the hay. There was no contract about it because there was no
right.
money. And if the turf would be cut, we cut Adrian Flanley's turf today, we cut Dave McGowan's turf next
Absolutely.
Week, we cut the next week. Yeah, and that was the mehel. That mehel still exists today in around death
yeah.
in Ireland. That's when the local lads come together and offer to dig the grave. And that's very still very strong around where I live here
yeah.
today.
Right.
And that's a very therapeutic thing for a bereaved family. To see people dropping, even the busiest people,
yeah.
dropping their daily work to come and help them.
David, I just want to put you on hold just for a second because we are leaving some radio stations. Like WVNJ in New York and those across the nation. But we will continue this conversation on irishradio.com because this is very interesting, and particularly when you talk about the mehel. The mehel, as I remember, and many of our listeners will remember, the mehel was a very local, it was parochial, and in many cases, in addition to, you know, the widows who would be stuck with a lot of children, you had, the absentee head of household. The fathers would be, in England or in Scotland doing seasonal work. So it was very important that everybody would pitch in without any expectation whatsoever of compensation. It was kind of one hand washing the other. You help me today, and I'll help you tomorrow. But you would have known that in Eastgie, and I would definitely have known it, from Attie Mass. But again, starting with the famine, and to this very day, there is that great Irish, compassion for the neighbors. So there's no big, and there still is no big deal in terms of gathering up, getting together and doing a job for those, particularly those who couldn't possibly bring up a family with all of the tremendous hard work that was necessary. You remember that, right?
Oh yeah, but it still exists today in North Mayo. It's there, and I encourage it. You mentioned today about the wake. I still encourage people to take their deceased home, even though they decide to use my funeral home. But I say, because I like the concept of bringing somebody home. Now, I know you can't do that in America, but you have to remember, the New Jersey guys brought me out to America to talk to them and explain to them about the mehel and all the wake in Ireland, because the funeral industry in America is breaking down. Because health and safety has come along and said, you can't take somebody home. You can't carry a coffin. You can't dig the grave yourself. It's all no, 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 no. And I told them that we can still dig the grave. We can still bring a person home. We can do all of these things. And that's why our the traditional burial cremation hasn't taken off yet. It's still traditionally burial. Because we've allowed people to do what they want. It's a pride and it's an honour to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're told, I can't do this and I can't do that and I can't do that, well, then you may as well take them to the crematorium then. So
right.
that's what's happening to them in America. And you know something? Like, these are all traditions, rituals, and it's our culture. And we are holding on to that strong, and we need to hold on to that. And I told the American funeral directors, I said, you lads, ye had it, and ye lost it. And they looked at me kind of from the floor, from the stage, and they said, what do you mean we had? I said, your grandparents, your parents, the 22 million that left this island brought all those traditions with them into America, right?
Mm-hmm.
And ye had them, and ye lost them. Now, ye still hold on to one particular one, which is Halloween, trick or treat. That
mm-hmm.
tradition was brought to ye by the Irish. I said, they asked, how could that be? How was it the Irish that did this? I said, in long gone by days in Ireland, people would ramp the roads of Ireland at a particular time of the year, and they would go in, I said, and they'd knock on the door and offer to pray or sing for the deceased in return for money or food.
Yeah.
Now, to remind people of that time of the year, they would take a turnip, they'd cut out the inside of it, they'd make a face in it, put a candle in it, and stick it around different ditches around. Now, that was all fine. So, when the 22 million people left Ireland and went into New York, turnips were not as readily available to them as they were back home.
Right.
So they looked at the closest thing. That was the pumpkin. So, mm-hmm. And it amazes me that that tradition is still brought on there. I talk to people in New York, I talked to a builder in New York when I was researching it, that still puts a holy middle into the foundations of the building where I built.
Right.
So these were traditions that these people brought. In relation to funerals, I told American industry, funeral industry, I said, ye had all these traditions and ye lost them. But by God, we're going to try and hold on to them here in Ireland. Does that make sense to you?
That's so well put now, I could have nothing to add to that. But let's come back now to the west of Ireland and to struggling, beautiful, European blue flag beaches in Enniscrón, which indicates that the beach and the beaches in Enniscrón are among the top class of Europe. So yet you have, I'd like to ask you, like, with all of the progress and with the European Union coming up with skites of money for, for highways and throughways and great access to Ireland now, does that cut in somewhat to say the beach area, say of Enniscrón? Is that a help or a hindrance?
That's a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
The people of the west of Ireland have to go out and fight for the business. We have the worst broadband speed in Europe, so there's nothing there to attract major infrastructure. Everything is spread around Dublin down to the south. This part of the country has been starved. There are no attempts. There isn't enough of a population down here, so we're left to fend for ourselves. And people are turning around and look at what I'm doing. I'm fighting that battle. I'm putting something into this corn that the whole world will want to see.
Sure.
What I'm doing next week will be captured on the whole world. And I'm bringing attention. But we have to go out and see it. I've been ringing different agencies there to come and look at me side and help me financially and this, that, and the other. So I never get a phone call. I'm just in the wrong place. But then I got a call one day from a guy outside Dublin. He said, would you move your plan in your site to Dublin, your ideas? And he said, this will definitely work. And I said, well, no, so how can I bring my site to Dublin? He said, if you got a 3-acre site for nothing, would you do it? And I thought about it long, and I said, no, so that's not what I want to do here. I want to promote Sligo. I want to promote North Mayo. I want to promote Enniscrón. And I just wanted the place I'm passionate about, the place I decided to leave America and come home and rear my children and feed my children and send them to school. That's where I want to be, and that's what I want to do.
Why would I move to
Dublin?
Mm-hmm. Now your Enniscrón has for many, many immigrants, particularly those from the west of Ireland, Enniscrón was a great place. It was a treat to go to places like Enniscrón, and Enniscrón in particular was the flagship of all north of Galway. That was the flagship tourist spot, the tourist destination. Now, in Enniscrón, by the sandy banks there, there was, again, throughout the decades, a camp site, a place where people could get caravans, as they were known in the day, and have a seasonal second temporary home in Enniscrón. As a child myself, the greatest treat was every August we would take a house, rent a house in Enniscrón. The house actually was called Fatima, and it was at the butt of the hill there in Enniscrón, and it was the greatest treat ever as people came to Enniscrón. But the caravan site, which was extended through the years to permanent homes there in Enniscrown. It was very much a part of the tourism tool for the west of Ireland, including a lot of cottages that were built down by the pier towards Carrahovoc there. So it was not. You have brought this to a brand new level by bringing something that has never existed before. The notion of taking a 767, 70-ton plane and bringing it up to Enniscrone, that is brilliant. That's great. Now, where is your property? I mean, in relation
right,
to...
Right, you mentioned the campsite there, the caravan site. I'm directly across the road from the campsite. Now, I could have... When Sligo County Council eventually gave me planning after 2 years, 2 years of stressful planning, Adrian. It was just absolutely one of the most stressful things ever I did. But anyway, I got it anyway. But it's directly across from the caravan site that you all just talked about. Now, I could have whacked my side out with caravan, and I'd only have been competing with the poor man across the road who's doing a very good job. But, no, I said to myself, I'm not splitting that cherry with you. I'll go and I'll do something that'll even enhance your site. So the thought of turning all types of transportation into the site. Now, there's a bit of thought in it now, Adrian. If I decide to go transportation into accommodation, it could end up very much looking like a scrapyard. So what I did was I put a theme to the concept, and the theme is an airport setting. So I'm going to have my jumbo jet, if I successfully land there next week, I'll have her up in one corner of the field. And across the road from that, I'm going to have 10 double-decker buses, which would normally be seen outside of an airport. Yeah. And then along the road that's leading into that, I'm going to have a train. And it'll be heading in the direction of the airport. And across from the train, then, I've acquired 10 London black taxis. And I'm going to have them parked outside the train where people can sleep in them as well, because you'd normally see taxis out for the train station.
Right.
So it's something different. It's something unique. Now, it'll take me a lot of work. Now, the first thing I have to do is land that Boeing 767, because that's an unusual move. It has never been done in the world before. Right. And if I succeed, it'll be a serious attraction in the town.
Okay, David, let me just ask you, though. First of all, you have to get the plane off the runway at Shannon. So how are you going to get that over to the barge in the first place?
Right, this is the plan now. We had to cut the wings outside the landing gear because I have only 40 foot in Enniscrone to get up the road, or else I'd have to take down all the lights in Enniscrone.
Yes.
So we had to cut just outside the landing gear, which is 40 foot. You take the tips of the wings off, right?
Mm-hmm.
We then had to make a cradle to put the Boeing into, because we have to bring her by truck up to the port. So if I put her sitting on the truck as it is, she'll be like an egg on a spoon, like. She'll be rocking over and back, and you'll probably lose it. So we had to make a cradle to put the Boeing into, that it can be lifted by a crane, sit it on the truck. So then I'm bringing it down to the runway 11. I suppose many people will know runway 11. Thousands and thousands of Irish people left runway 11. Yeah, well, that's the runway I'll be bringing her down. Now, there's 100 metres of grass between the end of that runway and the main road going into Shannon.
Uh-oh.
So I have to put... Hello?
Go ahead. No, I'm listening.
At the end of the runway, I have to put what they call bog mat. That's a mat that's made out of timber. They use them in the bogs to bring heavy machines over them. So I'm using 100 metres of bog mat to put down at the end of runway 11 to bring her out onto the main road. But then I have to take down the security fence around Shannon Airport. And I'll bring her out. Now, this has all been done between 2 and 4 in the morning, where there's no flights coming into Shannon. That's the window Shannon Airport has given me.
Mm-hmm.
But then we come out through the security fence, and I have to have men there to put that up immediately. The minute the tail of that has gone out that gate, up the road, and up to the roundabout that you mostly will know there, before you go into the terminal, we turn left, and the port is just down there to the left. Mm-hmm. We bring her up on a trailer, and then at the port, we will have a 500-ton crane, which will attach onto the cradle, lift me Boeing onto the barge. We're hoping to get the barge. We get the barge into a meter of water. That's the idea of a barge. Like, you can bring them in right into a meter of water.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have the tides right, Adrian. We can bring the barge into a meter and a half. So I don't really need a very high tide to come into this port, because it's very important, because I don't want the tide to go on me. So I have to get it loaded, then get back out on the full tide and get out the estuary and over up on the barge. The tug will pull it up to Niscone. When we get to Niscone, we're going to actually do something that's never been done before. We're going to actually beach the tug, let the tug in on the beach at a high tide. The reason we have to use a high tide, it'll bring it up as near to the road as possible.
Right.
We will then run the mat out on the beach. I will actually be building a road out into the Atlantic Gorge.
Yeah.
And the crane will actually go out on those mats, meet the barge. Then a truck, we'll get a truck, special truck that's being built with trailers. We'll reverse out. We'll pick up, hopefully, the cradle and place the plane on the trailer.
And is that,
up the road then.
Okay, so is that little bit of a road which comes from the Strand past Conway's, is that where you're going to bring it?
That's correct, yeah. We'll be going up by Paddy Conway's house. Now, there'll be only inches there. Paddy Conway's daughter came out the other day and asked me, Adrian, said, how close will it be? I said, well, where's your bedroom? She said, there it is, up there at the gable. Well, I said, it's like this. You'd be able to put out your hand and touch it. And she put her two hands up to her face. There'll only be about 8 inches there going out. So we have to be very careful. We don't stick the side of it in Paddy Conway's house. But anyway, Paddy is all right, but he's sound. I was in the house.
He's a sound man anyway. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But, it's bringing a jumbo jet up the main, up the streets of Enniscorn in rural Ireland. Like, it's a first. But I don't think there has been a Boeing move that way ever in the world. So there's a lot of attention and eyes on it. But so that's what I started out to think for, was to bring attention to North Mayo and West Sligo. And do you know, when I pull into the Killala Bay area, I've asked the seamen if they give me permission to let off 4 flares there, just in memory of all the people that lost their lives through the sea in Killala Bay, you know. So I'm hoping they'll let me do it, you know.
You're on your way, and definitely, you know, we're getting a few emails here from people saying, are you going to use the plane, or are you going to have a funeral home on your site, or is that have you gotten that far yet?
No, I'm not using the funeral home. This is a family park. I'm going to turn the plane into accommodation. Everything on the site will be accommodation. Now, I'm trying to keep the cockpit part of it, because I want to use it for a tour for children that they can get in. Because Enniscorn is seasonal. It's a seasonal town. I'm trying to think of things that I can do for the rest of the year. So one thing I came up with is I could make the whole site educational. So I went round to all the schools, all the national schools in Mayo and Sligo, and I talked to the principal teachers. I said, what would your kids like to do? And I told them about my idea. And they said, that would be absolutely brilliant. And they're schools. So I'd like to be able to get the kids into the cockpit, show them the oxygen mask, show them the seat, safety belts, maybe put on the safety belts and let them slide out the slides in out the door. So that sort of thing would be exciting.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff would be new. But if anybody wants to track us and see where we're going there, Adrian, I'd really appreciate it to look up Quirky, Q-U-I-R-K-Y, Quirky Nights, Glamping Village, Enniscorn, County Sligo.
Give us
and
that again now.
Quirky, as in Quirky, Q-U-I-R-K-Y.
Yes.
Quirky Nights, N-I-G-H-T-S.
Yes.
Glamping, G-L-A-M-P-I-N-G.
Right.
Village, Enniscorn, County Sligo.
And there you have it.
And I would love anybody in New York to go visit that page, share it if they like what they see, because those are the figures that top up and help us over here. And I seriously believe that you people out there understand where I'm coming from and what I'm doing. And just to get the acknowledgement, we're not getting the support we should be getting from the rest of the country. But what we'll do is we'll just let the world see that there are people interested in what we do over here. And we would love to see them in Enniscorn, Ballinair, or Sligo, during the summer.
You're a fountain of information, and Borth Fáilte, Tourism Ireland, you know, should be kissing your feet. Honest to God.
And the Wild Atlantic Way.
And the Wild Atlantic Way. You have the whole lot. Okay, listen, thanks. Good luck to you, David, and hope the tides work in your favor.
Just keep your fingers crossed for me, Adrian, because it is, like, there's no one guaranteeing what I'm doing is going to work. Every engineer that I got talked to all week wouldn't sign off on a paper. Even the crane guy that lifts in the plane, he said, look, it's all there on my laptop, it's all there, the engineer's report is there. But he says, we've never lifted a Boeing 767 before.
Yeah.
So the tide, we don't know what I put in place is going to work, but we're definitely going to try it.
You're a great man, and we will follow up, of course, on your story, and fair play to you. You're a mountain of a man to take this on. Okay, my guest friends, you know, David McGowan from Eastgay by way of Ballina and now to Enniscrone. Thank you, and good luck to you. I know it's going to work. Sure, we're going to keep our fingers crossed. We'll be touching wood. And if any man on the face of this earth can do it, that would be you. Okay. Good luck. Thank you.
Adrian, thank you, and thanks for giving me the time. We need all the help we can get over here.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. So long now. Bye. Okay. The only thing that I feel the only appropriate way to end on this is to go back to Elvis Presley. Who's from South Wicklow, and you know, one thing we do know is that in the west of Ireland, everybody will be all shook up. So long, God bless. The Flannelly Show live from New York.
Well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love. I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah. Well, my hands are shaking and my knees are weak. I can't seem to stand on my own two feet. Who do you think of when you have such luck? I'm in love. I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah. Well, please don't ask me what's on my mind. I'm a little mixed up, but I feel fine. When I'm near a girl that I love best, my heart beats so it scares me to death. When she touches my hand, the one that she likes, her lips are like a volcano that's hot. I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love. I'm all shook up. My tongue gets tied when I try to speak. My insides shake like a leaf on a tree. There's only one cure for this body of mine. That's to have that girl and a love so fine. She touches my head and what a chill I got. Her lips are like a volcano that's hot. I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love. I'm all shook up.
The Flannelly Show. Flannelly Show live from New York. IrishRadio.com worldwide. Everything archived on IrishRadio.com.